Do you like books? I mean, really, really like books? Then you're in the right place. Each week, your host, Sam Hankin, interviews the best of today's top-selling authors and the up-and-coming superstars of modern literature. This is The Avid Reader. Here is your host, Sam Hankin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Avid Reader. Today, our guest is Alice Hoffman. As you all know, Alice has published 23 novels, 3 books of short fiction, and I think 8 children and young adult works. Some of her very familiar works are Here on Earth, Practical Magic, At Risk, The Dove Keepers, The Museum of Ordinary Things, and the book that every staff member in my bookstore goes crazy about, The Marriage of Opposites. Her latest book is Faithful, which is published by Simon & Schuster. Oh, and by the way, Alice will be appearing at the Ambler Theater on November 3rd. It's a theater I have been going to since I was 13. I used to see a double feature on Saturday morning for 35 cents, including popcorn, and it was usually Vincent Price in Theater of Blood or Dr. Sardonicus. So Faithful traces the journey of a girl, not yet a woman, who finds herself, at least in herself, guilty of a tremendous betrayal and its consequences when a car wreck, for which she really was not responsible at all, leaves her best friend Helene in a persistently vegetative state, ameliorated only by a certain ineffable, miraculous aspect to her coma. So throughout the book, Shelby tries to come to grips with varying amounts of success, with her own minimal sense of self-esteem and the unfortunate fact that she really is a very, very good person. So the question is, how do you reconcile the two? So throughout this somewhat picaresque journey, she comes across people, animals, and Chinese food that help propel her along a path. Sometimes one step forward, 2 steps back, that seemingly lead, without the assistance of fortune cookies, to, as one reviewer said, recalibration, or I say redemption or a new life. So welcome, Alice, and thanks so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So the first conclusion I came to after reading the book is that you, as well as I, love Chinese food.
You know what? I don't.
What?
No, isn't that terrible? Yeah,
yes.
I think it's because, like James, the character of James in the book, lived behind a Chinese restaurant for 20 years.
Right.
And after a while, it's just like, forget it, I'm not going there anymore. Sometimes your characters are very different than you are.
Well, but he does eat Chinese food for Shelby, though, once.
Oh, yes. He's a fanatic.
So I know fortune cookies are false because my last one was, you're good looking and you know it, with 2 exclamation points.
I like that one.
Well, there was a Twilight Zone episode that said, it was a food critic and he gave a bad review. So the next time he went to the Chinese restaurant, his fortune said, you are going to die. And then...
I missed that somehow. I don't know how I missed that one.
And you and I are exactly the same age. I looked it up. We're almost to the month. And the second time he gave it a bad review, he opened the fortune cookie and it said, you are dead. And that's where he was, like the Flying Dutchman.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that cool?
That Rod Serling. I mean, I love The Twilight Zone. That was really my favorite TV show.
Me too.
I have to say.
And my cousin was Jack Klugman, and he was in more of...
What?
Yeah.
He was in so many of them.
Yeah,
oh,
he was
great.
I can't believe you said that. He was in the most of them. He was in the one where Gabriel's Horn, where...
Yeah.
Kip was dying in Vietnam, and he was in the one where he played pool with Jonathan
Winters.
Where
he played pool with Jonathan Winters. Yeah, that was a great one.
And he was one like the Flying Dutchman, where his spaceship lands and he finds his own spaceship there with all of them dead inside, and then he keeps trying over and over to. And there was another one too, but I forgot which one that was. But
he was a great actor. You know, there's something about the Twilight Zone that really, I think, changed who we were watching that show.
I think so.
And I think it affected people like the way a novel affects you. It had a very deep effect on people. The interesting thing is, I think Ray Bradbury, who's kind of one of my literary heroes, and in the book Faithful, people are crazy about Ray Bradbury. He wrote one of them, and I think he had one of them on The Twilight Zone. He was very unhappy with it. I know that.
Huh.
It's when you can buy a grandmother, but she's really a robot.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one.
Oh, I Sing the Body Electric, it was called.
Yes, I remember that book, too. And that, so far, we've done nothing to sell your book, by the way. But
we can
bring it back to Ray Bradbury, because The Illustrated Man is like a motif in your book. And
it is.
I mean, when I was when we were both the same age, when I was like 12 or 13, I read everything from Something Wicked This Way Comes to The October Country to all those things. The October Country, the short stories, they scared the hell out of me.
Well, for me, my favorite was Something Wicked and The Illustrated Man. And I think I always say that when, you know, if you want to create a reader, give a kid who's 12 or 13 a Ray Bradbury book. And that's it. That's what did it for me.
Oh, just The Martian Chronicles. The one part of it where they go, they all think they're at home. They all think they're back at home and they're so happy, but it's just an illusion.
I think to bring it back to Shelby and Faithful, you know, I think that's what she's struggling with is, you know, what's an illusion? You know, what's her real life? Who is she? You know, I think the Twilight Zone echoed that, and that's why it was, like, so effective, is that I think that's what people are thinking all the time. You know, what am I doing here? What's the worth of my life? Who am I really? You know, why am I surviving and living when somebody else isn't? You know, all those questions that are really hard to answer.
Yeah, and the thing about you actually writing young adult books, too, is that young people, young women, obviously, will love this book because they're struggling with the same issues that Shelby is, albeit to a lesser extent.
Yeah. I mean, I think of this book as a book for, I could see mothers and daughters reading it because it's kind of, turned out to be kind of a love story about, you know, this girl's mother who she, you know, is, she's such an impossible, difficult, horrible teenager, and her mother just stands by her no matter what.
But I never thought in the beginning that her mother would turn out to be the angel that she was.
No.
I never thought that.
I know. You know, I think the funny thing is that as you grow up, you know, the things that you hate your parents for, you sometimes wind up loving them for in the end and respecting them for. It's funny how that kind of flips and switches.
Yeah. It's like Mark Twain said, you know, when I was 18, my father was such an idiot. And then when I was 21, I couldn't believe how much knowledge he had gained in 3 years.
That's it.
But yeah, like her father, for example, I mean, not giving anything away, kind of, because I've read the reviews, he's kind of a louse, but then he undergoes, not, I wouldn't call it a sea change, but he does change.
Yeah,
but
he
was a mess though, wasn't he?
I think so. Yes, I agree.
I wouldn't have put up with any of that.
Well, you know, I think relationships are so complicated, and
they are
in this book. You know, sometimes, you know, you can love someone and it just doesn't work out, you know, and you don't know why, and, you know, they're just not the right person, or you know, it just doesn't work. And it's kind of an emotional mystery.
Well, it's like in your book, too. It's like your book is confusing sometimes in a really good way. Like, I'm wondering, did roses really grow in the winter outside her house, or did they not? You know.
Well, you know, I think those are answers for the reader, not the writer, right? Yeah. But I've certainly seen roses in December.
Just depends on why.
Yeah, it depends on why.
Actually, my rose bushes are blooming. It's almost October. I mean, it's almost November. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it's like, at first, I was credulous about, how could she feel so, and this is also in the review, so I'm not spoiling anything, but how could she feel so responsible for the car wreck when deep down she knew that it wasn't her fault, that she just spun out? And she kind of blamed Helene for a while because Helene was like, you know, let's go out. And she's saying, no, I don't want to. But then I realized I do that all the time. You do it all the time. Everybody does it all the time.
I mean, I think survivor's guilt takes many different forms, and I think if you are kind of a sensitive person, you can't help but go to a certain place that, you know, carries guilt. You know, why did something happen to someone and not to you? Why, you know, who's responsible for some terrible thing? Because I think there are so many mysteries that there's just no answer to things. You know, and as human beings, we want an answer. We want to find an answer. And maybe that answer is blaming ourselves. But, you know, I just think that's what happens to Shelby, is that she needs an answer. Why did this happen?
And the thing is, she shuts down so much of herself, and you let her let it out gradually. But deep down, or not even deep down, she is inherently a good, good person. Mm-hmm. And she does nothing but good throughout the book, and yet she feels and acts out in this way in which she believes that she's the worst person that ever lived.
Yeah. I think sometimes when something terrible happens in your life and you don't know how to explain it, I mean, you're the person in the room with yourself, and, you know, very often, you know, that's who you blame.
And it's like her relationship with Ben. I mean, I felt so sorry for him. And then for a while, then for a while I didn't feel sorry for him. And then I felt sorry for him again. And it's like, I thought, you know, okay, it's like Love Actually, you know, it's like, it kind of would have worked, but for.
Yeah, it would have worked, except it didn't. I mean, that's the thing. Sometimes, you know, you can really like someone, you can really love someone, but they're just not right for you, and it just doesn't work. And I don't know. I don't want to give too much away, but for me, they're better as friends.
Yeah, it's so funny because every time I bring up a point with you, I realize, oh, wait a minute, that happened to me. But while I'm trying to quiz you, like, oh, that doesn't really happen in real life. And then I realize, oh, yeah, it did. It happened to me a couple of times.
Yeah, it does. Things just happen.
Yeah, that's the other thing about the book, too, is like for a while I thought, well, these are a lot of coincidences that are happening, especially the biggest coincidence. And then I realized, you know what? That happens, too.
I think it really does happen. I don't want to give the biggest coincidence away. I don't really think of it as a coincidence, but I think, you know, sometimes, you know, fates just, you know, meet, or they just, things happen that you don't expect to happen. And, you know, you can't plot it, really. You know, it just happens. And, you know, I think that happens in writing a novel, too. You know, you start out going in one direction, and then the characters kind of take over. And if a book is really alive, they take over, and they start to do things, and they're kind of out of your control.
Yeah, it's like when you were talking in one of your interviews about how you write, and you were talking about how you write, you can't not write. And you write really fast, but you write really fast because one time you had to write really fast in order to complete a novel that you said you already kind of had done.
But I think it was good training to, you know, then, you know, when I had to write really fast, it taught me that I had to just get up every day and do it. I didn't have time to think about it. And I always think that, you know, the best fiction doesn't come from thinking, it comes from feeling.
Yeah, and that's why what you're saying is right. I think if you're writing really fast, and I would assume that that's when you do go off on tangents. When I was just interviewing Amor Towles, who was talking about A Gentleman in Moscow, and we're talking about one character, and he goes, you know, I didn't realize that he knew how to juggle. And I guess you have those moments all the time.
Oh, yeah, that's really funny, and I think it's really true. And I think that's when you know that the book's coming alive.
Yeah. Yeah, when all of a sudden the character's telling you, you know, I also know how to do this.
Right, yeah, that happens.
It's funny that the characters in this book, and in many of your books, they're all flawed to a certain extent. Even Helene, at least through what I know of her, but, you know, like we were talking about, Ben, her mom and dad, even Maribel is flawed, and, you know, her children to a certain extent, but they're all flaws that you create in such a way that they're reparable. They're not they're not impossible to cure, right?
Right. I mean, I think that's true of most people, you know? I mean, everybody has flaws, and, you know, it's kind of the flaws that you can tolerate. You know, that's who you gravitate towards. And you know, there's no one without flaws, and these characters are flawed people, but I think they're really, they feel human to me. They feel real.
This book is kind of a departure for you in some ways, but I wonder when you were looking at it, well, tell me, where did Shelby come from? Because it must have started someplace.
Well, you know, it's a departure in that my last three novels have been, you know, historical novels.
Right.
But, you know, I've written about, you know, kind of modern urban life, you know, before. And so in a way, it feels like kind of a return to something for me. It's really hard, you know, I never exactly know where things come from, where the ideas for novels come from, because I think they come from so many different places, some of them subconscious, some of them things I see. I don't know where it started from, but, you know, Shelby is very obsessed with dogs and with rescuing dogs, and especially rescuing dogs that she feels are being used or brutalized or in some way. And, you know, I have an extreme attachment to dogs, I have to say. And I think, you know, what happened to what Shelby sees, I saw once where for me, it was a dog and a cat were being traded among people, you know, as kind of props to use to ask for money. And nobody really owned them. They were just like rented out. And it was disturbing, you know, it was really disturbing. So I think maybe somewhere, you know, if I go back, that's probably the central thing that started it. But I think what I really wanted to write about was survivorship. And I think that's the theme that I'm interested in. And, you know, how do you survive trauma, and how do you get on with your life, and how do you find out what you want to do with your life?
And it's like the title, too. I mean, it can point directly to one specific person and one specific series of incidents, but it also resonates in some other ways, too. And I thought that was interesting the way you did that, because...
Yeah.
Did you have the title?
No, I didn't have the title. I didn't know what the title was going to be, and it just kind of came after the writing, actually. Sometimes that happens, you know? And it just seemed to be what the book was about on so many different levels, whether it was about love or friendship or motherhood or dog, you know, that it was about, that's what it was about.
Yeah, it's funny because, like when I was talking about the roses, some of the things kind of skirted, whether you like the term or not, they skirted magical realism. It was almost like part of it was like Sophie's World or something like that, where, you know, someone's getting these letters in the mailbox and they don't know where they're coming from.
Mm.
And you're not sure whether they're coming from inside the book, outside the book, whether you're in the book or not in the book. And for so long, that was occurring here. And I didn't know. And I don't think, all right, that's enough, right? I'm starting to spoil it, right?
Yeah, right. We can't talk about
that. Okay. I end up thinking that I'm just talking to you.
I know. But, you know, the thing about magic is, you know, I feel like, you know, the way I felt like when I read Ray Bradbury or when I read, you know, when I began to become a reader, I just think books are magical. They're magical objects. Doesn't matter what's inside them, they feel like magic to me. So it seems only natural, and I just gravitate towards magic. You know, sometimes full-on magic, sometimes it's about the way the kind of writing I'm trying to reach, or you know, how I'm trying to get the world across. It seems to me magical.
It is magical. I mean, look, I own an independent bookstore, so it's obviously a labor of love for me.
Right.
But some of the best moments of my life have been when I've gone into a bookstore to get a book and I see the book on either the left side or the right side. And those are the books that have changed my life. I find the book I want, but I don't care about Amazon's recommendations to me for my iPad. Those are books that I know I'll like. But when you go to find a book and you look to the left and look to the right, those are the moments that I remember.
Those are great moments when you just discover something. And that kind of brings you back to kind of being a child reader or a teen reader when you're just wandering around. You know, you've never heard of Salinger. You've never heard of, you know, you never heard of it. You just pick it up and you find it and you discover it, and it's rediscovered all over again. It's a very magical moment.
Well, this really pissed me off. I was reading Catcher in the Rye, and this woman, Lois Glantz, who probably is no longer with us, she'd be like 98, but... Lois Glantz saw me reading it, and I said, "This is a great book written by Salinger. It's called Catcher in the Rye." And she goes, "Ugh, you boys all like that book at this age." And it really bothered
That's
me.
That's a horrible thing to say.
I know.
It's probably true.
It is true, but she didn't have to say it.
Yeah, it's true. Oh, well.
The corollary of that is that there's sometimes, and I've told this story before, there was a 12-year-old kid who came into my bookstore And he went to the back and he came up front and he had War and Peace with him.
Wow.
And I couldn't charge him for it. I mean, how could you possibly charge somebody who's 12 years old for buying War and Peace? It just
didn't seem right.
That's
great.
And luckily I have the luxury to do that, but it's just that there's, yes, it's all wrapped up in this magic you're talking about.
Yeah. It's true.
I'm still trying to think of the fourth episode my cousin was in.
I still can't believe he was your cousin.
Yeah.
And he's a great actor.
I know. And I said to him one time, Jack, what's the worst thing? Because everywhere we'd go, everyone would go, Dr. Quincy. And so he'd have to sign autographs. But I still thought The Odd Couple was better. And 12 Angry Men.
Yeah, The Odd Couple was good.
But I said, what's the worst thing about signing autographs? And he goes, not enough people ask me. He was a great guy. He really was.
It's a good story.
Well, so anyway, I love your book. I know you have, I've run past your time already, but it's...
Oh, but thank you so much. And, I just think, I love, your stories about bookstores, because really bookstores just open the world for so many people. And it's just been a pleasure talking to you. And thank you for loving Faithful.
Yeah, and it'll be, since I own a bookstore, I can tell you, and now that I can do it, it'll be on our front desk. And I'm sure... that it will be a book club pick for later this year or early next year. So maybe you can Skype in and talk to some of our book club people.
Thanks. I've never figured out really how to Skype very well, but thanks for the invite. And thank you for everything. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. That was Alice Hoffman talking to us about her latest book, Faithful. And she's written so many great books. And Marriage of Opposites is one that's like everybody in my bookstore loves that book. And trying to look at my beginning page about some of the other books that she's written that I want to make sure I get the titles right. But Practical Magic is one. The Dove Keepers is another. Museum of Ordinary Things. They're all great books. And, I felt honored that I was able to talk to her. She was so gracious to me. So I just... continued to be so overwhelmed that these people are willing to talk to me and that actually seem to enjoy it, unless they're just flattering me, which is possible. But in any event, we've had a great year. We're now into November, but we've had a great year of great, great authors, thanks to Rebecca Albright, who's our producer and just keeps finding more and more people, Pulitzer Prize winners, National Book Award winners, Man Booker Prize winners, people that, they're often going to be on WCHE 1520 AM in Westchester or on the internet as my podcast on the Avid Reader, which you can find easily just by going to iTunes. Oh, and the other thing I'm going to do, because I don't have Arbitron or anything that I can really track who's listening to my shows, but so here's what you do. Also, Kathy Fortenoy, who ran Chester County Book Company for a third of a century, recently closed, as you may know, if you read books. And I'm encouraging you to come to our bookstore, Wellington Square Bookshop in Eagleview, which is only a few minutes away from her store. 15 minutes I make the ride every day to come down here to the studio. And come by, and there's going to be tons of restaurants there. There's a Nudie's there. There's Brickside's there. There's going to be a Italian, Mexican, farm-to-table, sushi restaurant there. It'll be like a little Westchester in a one street area. And so anyway, come by, tell me who my favorite author is, and I'll give you a $5 gift certificate. So you won't be able to know who my favorite author is unless you're listening to me now. So I'll tell you, here's my favorite author. My favorite author is James Joyce. So come by, say, hey, Sam's favorite author is James Joyce, and you get a $5 gift certificate. But don't tell all your friends to say that. You have to be listening to this in order to do it. The honor system. So just come by and say that and get a $5 gift certificate. That might be my own little Arbitron Nielsen rating system for my radio show. So in any event, thanks as always for joining us. It was a wonderful time talking to Alice Hoffman. And we hope you come back next week. Oh, wait a minute. I can tell you who's coming up. Madeline Thien, who is the author of Do Not Say We Have Nothing, is shortlisted for the Man Booker award for this book, and by the time the broadcast comes, we'll know whether she won or not. And then we have Elaine Khosrova, whose book Butter, A Rich History, is a history of more than you could ever expect to know about butter. Like the people I've interviewed, I think I've said before, about cod and salt and the pencil and the paper. These are commodities that we use every day, although butter's not quite a commodity. But you reach for it across the table, you ask someone to pass it, you take a slice of it, you put it on your bread, you put it on your baked potato, you put it on your English muffin, and you don't even think about it. But you use it every day. It is everywhere, just like candles, just like salt, just like pencils, just like paper. So anyway, she'll be here to talk about her book, and she's fascinating. And we have a whole list of other people. I don't have them right here, but we've got like 10 in a row that are really cool. And we just had a really good year. And then at the end of the year, we'll have our best of when Donna McFadden, the manager of the bookstore, and I will fight it out. Kind of, I call it our Fight Club episode. And so we look forward to you coming by to listen to all these shows. And as always, thanks for being a faithful listener here on the Avid Reader.